Hi, good afternoon. Welcome to this afternoon's NAESP webinar on Lead for Literacy Centers Leadership Institute. This afternoon's webinar is going to focus on assessment and screening, and I have the pleasure to introduce NAESP's Associate Executive Director for Professional Learning, Gracie Branch. Hi, Gracie. Welcome.
But I am very, very pleased to be here. NAESP is really has enjoyed their partnership with the Lead for Literacy Center. So I want to introduce you to our speakers today. So I want to start with Lana Santoro. Lana is the co-principal investigator at the Lead for Literacy Center at the University of Oregon, and she also serves as their lead for professional development and technology assistance. We also have Dr. Lauren Artsy is a technical assistance coach for the Lead for Literacy Center and senior researcher at American Institutes for Research. She brings 16 years of experience in education, 5 as an ESL teacher, and 11 years of experience in education research and as a technical assistance and professional development provider. David Feinstein is a doctoral candidate in the school psychology program at the University of Oregon, and he works as a graduate employee of the Center on Teaching and Learning. He has experience working as a special education assistant and school psychologist in British Columbia, Canada, and has more recently served on projects in Oregon as an interventionist and data coach. So thank you all for being here. We're looking forward to all of the information that you're going to share with us today.
Thanks so much, Gracie. It's wonderful to be here. And on behalf of the Lead for Literacy Center, I just want to thank you for the wonderful partnership we've had with NAESP. We're a grant funded by the Office of Elementary and Secondary Education in partnership with the Office of Special Education Programs. Our grant supports the Lead for Literacy Center across two institutions, the University of Oregon Center on Teaching and Learning, where David and I are affiliated, and the American Institutes for Research, where Lauren's affiliated. And we have established a special partnership with NAESP to support this webinar series, and we're excited to launch it into our second session, which Lauren will tell you more about in a moment. So thank you. It's wonderful to be here.
Great. Thank you so much, everybody, for the introductions. So this is part of, as Lena was saying, of a webinar series with NAESP. And the sessions, you can see the sessions on their screen. And so we overviewed the Lead for Literacy framework, which is developed as a framework to support school leaders in their school-wide implementation of multi-tier systems of support reading frameworks. And you can find all those materials on the NAESP website, and that session was from September 8th. And so now we're kind of diving into each of the components of the Lead for Literacy framework. And today's session, as you see, highlights screening and the role of assessment in the framework. We have other sessions on January 7th. We will be doing a session on early literacy. And then we have another assessment session coming up after that. And then we'll turn to the instruction components of the framework and wrap up the year on June 3rd, talking about the professional development piece of the Lead for Literacy framework. So we're really excited in this partnership and this partnership with this web series. So I am joined by my colleague on the professional development team, David Feinstein, who will be facilitating and leading us through this assessment session. And in today's session, we will be overviewing the best practices for assessment with a focus on screening, discussing current issues in assessment implementation, and addressing assessment in the current context of this current situation. But the assessment sessions are linked, and next session we'll be diving deeper into the role of progress monitoring and linking assessment outcomes with instructional change. The session objectives for today is to recognize features of research-informed practices on the types of assessment, really looking at a focus on screening and the role of the Lead for Literacy framework, describing barriers and solutions that impact screening, and the role of database decision-making in that process, and identifying strengths and stresses in assessment practice, and we'll also be looking at some resources too in the Lead for Literacy Center's framework to support that. I also see that everyone's putting your name and role and area in the chat where you're from, and if you're able to, that's great. If at any time there are questions or any points of discussion you would like to dive into during this event, we can definitely connect through the chat, and we'll have other points in the webinar where we'll connect and talk. And so as the session's going on, if there's anything that comes up, any questions you have, please feel free to put them in the chat, and welcome everybody. I'll turn it to David in a minute, but before I do that, I just wanted to provide a little bit of background about the Lead for Literacy Center's framework. We know that really important components to reading instruction really relates to having children really know and have strong skills related to word recognition, so those decoding components, as well as strong skills for their language comprehension, so their abilities to understand text and the spoken language. And when they have strong decoding skills and strong language comprehension skills, then the research finds they're able to be skillful readers. And so we know that ensuring that instruction supports students in those skills is really important, and that frameworks such as multi-tiered systems of support that you see on your screen is really helpful to support all students, and also really support students who may be struggling readers. And so in a multi-tiered systems of support, you see that there's universal, sometimes it's called core instruction, that is instruction that all students have access to, and it's meant to really support children. We find that about 15% of students may not be responding as fully expected to core instruction, and so they may benefit from intervention, from research-based interventions on the areas such as code-based decoding, word recognition, or their language as well. And for students who may not be responding fully to their intervention, there are methods for intensifying intervention. So this entire framework is referred to as multi-tiered systems of support, and it's really helpful to support all students in this model. And so in light of that, the Lead for Literacy Center developed a framework for school leaders. We know that the role of school leaders is really important in this process to provide direction and support on the school-wide framework for reading in multi-tiered systems of support. And so this is the framework that was developed. And you can see from the framework that it's focused on leadership. And so really looking at the role of standards, priorities, and goals, administration, organization, and communication in the framework, assessments, which we'll be focused on in the session today. You can see assessments here. And then instruction and intervention will be focused on later in the series. All of this is nested within professional development structures and professional learning structures because we know that these capacity building opportunities are really important for the school system and for all educators in the system and leaders in the system in providing school-wide reading frameworks. And so with that, we do have a website, and we will be visiting the website later in the session at leadforliteracy.org. And on the website, there's some resources that can support school leaders and help school leaders in the development or implementation of their school-wide reading models within MTSS. And so we'll be looking later on more at the resource repository, but there's a number of literacy leadership briefs for school leaders, including briefs related that were just put up this week related to the recommendations from What Works Clearinghouse about evidence-based practices and instruction at all levels of the MTSS system. And then you can find more information about our Lead for Literacy framework also on the webpage, with additional resources and indicators around each of the framework components. And so, and I'll also put the website in the chat too. And so I'll be turning it over to David. This is actually from the website, and this is the specific components in the framework around assessment. And so today we will be focusing on screening, but you can find all the information on the website about the other components.
Wonderful. Yeah, thank you so much, Lauren. And I so appreciate your introduction from our NESP partners and also here at Lead for Literacy. We are thrilled to have you folks join us today. It is going to be an absolute power hour. We are going to discuss really core philosophy pieces around assessment and link that all the way through to the current context and how we can think about screening and apply that in the global health crisis context, in addition to ensuring that we have some of those best practices still at play. I realize that in this webinar, you're probably going to have a lot of discussion and questions that you would really like to be having. And within an hour, it's difficult to get all of that in and have your voice heard. Luckily, we have a lot of mechanisms for that. The primary one we're asking is that you use the chat. You can message Lauren Artsy directly, and that is privately, or you can actually just ask questions generally, as I see some of you are already doing in the chat. So thank you so much for participating. We have a few touch points for engagement, and we are absolutely thrilled to have you here. So to lay some really important groundwork, I want to make sure that we have common language around what it is we're talking about today. Assessment itself is a process of collecting data to make decisions. Hopefully, based on Lauren's introductory pieces, as well as the definition I just shared, that's already sparking some thoughts about what it is assessment can do in schools. We know that collecting data is a central part to assessment, but we also know that the implementation of assessment is sometimes stopping at that place where once we collect the data, we've done our job. And that's not the definition that we should be working with. We want to collect data to make decisions. We do not collect data to collect dust, right? So think already about the kinds of decisions you're making based on the data that you have in front of you. Screeners themselves, our focus today is just one assessment type. Now, screeners themselves should have efficient, valid and reliable attributes such that the assessment we get from them can really be used to inform appropriate and really helpful decisions down the line. Universal screening is something that's optimal. We want to be screening the whole entire class, the whole entire school, so that we can identify those learners at risk, though in the current context, and we'll certainly get into this toward the latter part of today's session, we understand that may not be possible. So individual screening is something that can be done. And individual decisions for students can be made based on screening those individual students. So I also want to make sure that as we lay this groundwork, I acknowledge that what we know is that there's some debate around the nuances of how to implement screening. We know screening practices are important. We want to be doing this, but there are lots of questions. Why do we spend time on assessment? Is this actually worthwhile right now? And it is so important to first off the top address that by saying, if you want to close a skill gap in literacy, the best way to close that skill gap now is to apply principles of effective instruction. That is to say, assessment is not the same thing as instruction. Assessment informs instruction. It helps build a continuum of our understanding of instructional change such that it's proximal to student need. So screening data is something that a lot of people can have difficulty grappling with because it exists in a universe of big data, right? Big data is a buzzword right now, but really there are so many data points we could look at in schools. I've noticed that some of the folks signing into today's webinar are very much at that systems level. They're looking at MTSS and applying RTI in a way that enhances their literacy system and maybe even more broadly behavioral, social emotional systems. And what we're here to discuss today is screeners within the context of formal data. That is, data that we can look at is much more objective and also just one component of the overall universe of data we could look at. Informal data, for example, is the kind of data that you as a literacy leader might think about and might acquire from walking into a classroom or sometimes zooming into a classroom and hearing from a teacher that student A, F, and L are really having a tough day today. They don't need to have a formal screener to determine a student's having a tough day. That's an informal data point which can be really impactful and really important to know. But teachers often have cultivated so many data points that is often our job as literacy leaders to help them sift through that data and pick out the points that really matter. Formal data, screening data really helps with that. It is one core component of an overall healthy literacy system. And it's used to identify students at risk for later difficulties in literacy. And as I'd already mentioned, and as I will drive home several times in today's session, there is no sense in collecting formal data if you're not going to use it. When we use it, we talk about the sense-making process. We need to do something. We need to make some decisions based on the data we have in front of us. Of course, there is no one-size-fits-all. And the graphic on the right, I hope, gives you a sense of the idea that there are a number of moving parts we sort of need to grapple with in order to set and reach a goal, an educational goal, of course. And in this case, as a literacy leader, we want to be using our screening data to inform instruction and to support instruction. In this case, we need to collect the data, absolutely. We need to do some sense making, that is, talk as a team, work as an individual through some of those issues and looking at the data in front of you to see which students are at risk, which students are not at risk, and how to take action on that. Now, when we do the sense-making process, ideally it's systematic. We really want to be making sense of data in a way that's consistent over time. So when you look retroactively back at what you did previously for decision-making based on the data points you had in front of you, what might you want to do differently this time? What might you want to refine with respect to your process of determining risk versus not at risk status? These should be mutually agreed upon goals for an assessment or perhaps data team. So, you know, taken together, I love this quote, and it's from the literature, and really the literacy research is so strong in what it suggests for the science of reading and what it suggests for the implementation of a healthy literacy system. Truly, assessments of reading achievement matter only when they answer important questions for teachers and schools, and they also enable informed data-based instructional decision-making. So let's zoom in a little more on screening. Let's really think about screening itself, what its purpose is, and how we can use it. As I've mentioned, screening, we really want to be identifying students who are at risk for having difficulty in their reading skill acquisition. Ideally, this is for all students. We want to universally get small touch points on how they're doing, how they're progressing and growing in their literacy skill acquisition. Because they should be small touch points, they need to fit within an efficient, valid, and reliable continuum as a tool that's really appropriate for use in your local context. And because they need to be touch points along the way, we look for administering screeners 3 times a year, typically fall, winter, spring. My hope is that you as a literacy leader have seen something like this. Let me orient you really quickly to what we're seeing here. So this is a Excel snapshot of a kindergarten class and their different skills on and sub-skills of various literacy really pillars that they need to be building a very strong foundation for their development of overall reading skill. That means that each column identifies a different sub-skill. The very first column is upper letter names. That is capital A all the way through capital Z. Then we progress about halfway here. We see consonant blends with short vowels. And then at the very end, we see kindergarten students' ability to read multisyllabic words. So for kindergarten, that we would expect students would have a little more difficulty. And as we look down the column, we see there are a number of students who have more difficulty with that. Each row identifies an individual student. So we can see the first row here, the student got 26 out of 26 letter names correct. They are in the green or tier one support or core support. There's a number of different categorizations for this, but green means good. We know that they have that skill fairly well formed from screening data. And as we continue along the row, we see eventually we reach an area of red. That suggests the student's at risk in this area. That is, again, for consonant blends with short vowels. We know on that particular task, there were 15 possible items they could have gotten correct, and they only got 9. This, for our data team, for our assessment team, is something we should really discuss. We want to think about instructional grouping. We want to think about instructional intensification for the student in this area. So again, hopefully as a literacy leader, you've seen something like this. You have data that you can sort of project in a snapshot. In one frame, you can look and say, okay, how's the health of my literacy system? What does this look like for this kindergarten class right now? What does this look like at this grade-wide level right now? If you haven't seen something like this, I highly encourage you to think about ways you can reorganize your data to look like this. Color coding systems are one thing that I have seen in the multiple different educational systems I've been so fortunate to work in. Color coding systems are very, very powerful. However, some folks really prefer a more numerically driven system where they really just have the numbers without various colors. Really up to you and what you think your data and assessment team needs. So now that we have an idea of what the snapshot should look like and a few of those key features of screening, we want to be thinking through and really critically analyze as literacy leaders how we're doing with each of those key features. Are we including truly all students? Are the measures that we're using, are they reliable and valid based on scientific research? Do we have a very solid understanding that the tools that we use for screening are truly predictive of later student achievement? Do they show, do they give you an indication of student growth over time? Are we screening 3 times a year? And as well, are we identifying students, who are at risk of poor learning outcomes, which is sort of mixed with the third point that I mentioned. So, you know, as leaders in literacy, this gets back to our very first NASP session, that is Lead for Literacy's first NASP session with us and with hopefully all of you. There are a number of leadership factors that you want to be thinking about, that you want to drive change in your school system. Each of these has direct applications in screening. I am not going to list each one, but know the first one I see is so important. If you want to see student success as the number one priority in your school, then you should be pushing for alterable variables. Those are things that can actually change, typically related to instruction, after screening has taken place. Because again, if we screen, we need to collect that data and then do something. Hopefully it brought you to a place already where you've started to critically think about some of your own practices. You've thought through some of those strengths and some of those stretches, and you're asking, how can I be a better critical consumer of screening practices? Again, I'm going to point you to those key attributes. What do your literacy screeners look like? And are they, of the bullet point at the very bottom of the screen, are they easy to learn? Are the screeners that you're administering students time efficient? Because every minute in instruction is a minute, or sorry, every minute in assessment is a minute away from instruction. Are the screeners predictive to student growth? Do they tap some of those foundational pillars of literacy that are so important to build a strong base of decoding skills and reading comprehension? And as well, are they sensitive to identify the students who are truly at risk? And do they rule out the students who are not at risk? This is a good point where hopefully you have some of these questions circulating. Maybe you've been asking them in the chat. I'm going to ask Lauren in a moment to share, if she would, some of the questions that you have had. As well, I invite you to use the annotate feature and think about which of the following categories you most identify with. Do you see yourself as a literacy leader who's still learning about some of these links between screening data and use for educational decision making? Do you see yourself somewhat comfortable with that process, or do you see yourself as well experienced in this and we're really just looking to address the current context? So at the very top of your screen, there should be an options button and or an annotate button where you see a pencil. Click on that and click on the stamp feature, as you can see in the top left, and then identify which of the following categories you fall into in the bottom part of the table here. So I'll take a quick pause and ask Lauren if there are any questions.
Thanks. Yeah, I've been monitoring the chat, and it's been, I'm getting quite a few questions. First of all, there's been some comments just about, first, the chart that you showed really helps to understand not just in general where children are at in the system with respect to literacy, but breaking it out by component. So by the literacy components. And doing that can help get a sense of literacy instruction and needs across the system. There were some comments about they really liked your reference to, you know, to be really intentional and thoughtful about the screening data and the assessment data collected, and that we don't just collect tests, you know, like there's a reason for the data that's being collected. I did get two questions. One was a question related to if you can say more about the screening three times per year and, you know, why that's beneficial. And then there was a question about what kind of informal data might be collected in the system.
Oh, yeah, great. So, yeah, both good questions. And the first one, screening three times a year is suggested in the literature, and also many practitioners see that as important because we know if we just have one snapshot in time of screening data, then that is just speaking to one skill set for each individual child at that point in time. That says nothing about student growth. So with growth, we need at least two time points, right? We're going to need something that would look like beginning of year and end of year and seeing how we grow over that time, how students grow in their literacy skills over that time. Though, three time points is beautiful because that third one allows you some instructional adjustment. You can actually partway through the school year, typically in winter, take a look retroactively at how did things go from fall to winter? What kinds of instructional adjustments? How could we change our instructional grouping, for example, to then close out the year and then look at growth for the full year? So three time points is both for efficiency and then also look at instructional growth and change. And the second question, really good one as well. I think some of those informal points, I sort of brought up one example where you can ask a teacher, you know, how's your day going so far? Are there any students that you're noticing are really having an off day? That is just one example. Informal data is everywhere. Hopefully it's something that you as a literacy leader are tuned into. And I would really encourage you to think through some more of those examples. I have certainly seen examples where you can ask students more directly how things are going, or also observational data, really important. Although you might not be asking or sort of having some of those quick check-ins with folks, just simply being able to observe what's going on as a literacy leader and critical consumer with all this knowledge, knowing that you're going to use assessment data for change, having some of those touch points really, really important. So yeah, I love both those questions. Also, thank you so much for using the annotate feature. It looks like we have a good variety of folks on the continuum of where they're learning about instruction, being informed by some of that screening data. So I'm going to go ahead with the next section. Know that we're going to do two more check-ins. So please, either questions or comments to the group, love having that, or messaging Lauren directly, also okay. So I'm going to go ahead and clear the annotates. Perfect. Okay. So now we're going to launch in, and I understand that a number of us probably have very different proficiency and competencies with understanding what these screeners actually are. For the purposes of common language and common understanding, I'm going to launch through them really quick. And for those who are more experienced, I really encourage you to think about ways that these are actually being used. While you might have a good conceptual understanding of what skills these screening instruments and tools tap into, really critically dig deep and think what implementation actually looks like. Where could errors happen? And what is it important to link instructionally with the screening data that you get? So the first, an absolutely wonderful measure that many of my kindergarten teacher friends love giving and is so indicative of student strength and growth over time is phoneme segmentation fluency. This is a screening instrument or tool, I suppose, where you don't actually give a student any text to read. You simply, as an auditory task, ask them to break apart words into the smallest units of sound distinguishable. So if you presented the item plus, you would hope that a student would respond, p-l-a-s. They're breaking apart the different sounds in a word. And with that segmentation skill, hopefully that links and is truly indicative of blending. So if you presented p-l-a-s, they could blend all that together and recode that whole word as plus. Segmenting and blending are friends together. Those two skills compose a really, really important base for decoding and truly being able to read. So phoneme segmentation fluency, wonderful for our early readers. Letter naming and sound fluency, also very important tasks early on in school. They are, just as the names indicate, students have to quickly and efficiently name letters or name letter sounds. That is, for letter naming fluency, they would say L for L. And they would say S for S when presented with letter sound fluency. Both measures are important. Not all screening batteries include both, but think through that letter sound correspondence link that we absolutely need to have. Nonsense word fluency is an absolutely brilliant screening mechanism. I love this tool. What it really gets at is our youngest learners who, and sometimes even older learners, who have not quite grappled with some of those important decoding skills. So as they're learning to read, they just memorize what words look like. But we want them to be able to chew through a word with any text that they're presented. We don't want them to just memorize what all the words look like. We want them to be able to use strong decoding skills in order to read any word. Nonsense word fluency sort of provides a base for us as assessors to determine whether or not students are just memorizing what words look like or whether they truly have some of those important decoding skills. This would look like presenting students with nonsense words, for there's some as an example on the bottom here, and then asking students to read them aloud. So on the very far right, we see the example is pish, or the sounds p-ish. Now, of course, that's not a real word, but it's orthographically consistent, so students can read it as if it were a real word. Very, very handy. I will also point out, and hopefully for some of our more savvy literacy leaders in the crowd who've thought about what this measure really is, there should be a disconnect between this measure and instruction. This measure should not be instructed on directly. That is to say, if students have difficulty with nonsense word fluency, it speaks to the fact that there are some decoding skills they're going to want to work on. They might be memorizing what words look like instead of actually learning some of those and using some of those decoding tactics. But we do not want to be teaching students to read nonsense words. We want to be teaching students how to read real words and using their decoding skills to read real words. So there's an instructional link, and then there's an instructional consideration, I guess you could say, or disconnect. Very important to think about for nonsense word fluency. Word identification fluency, this is much more in line with your traditional word reading list, sometimes called Dolch-Fry list. There's a number of different word identification fluency tasks. Essentially, students quickly and efficiently need to read all the words they can on the page. Now, this typically done more grade 1 to 2, and includes both regular and irregular words. Typically, these measures start with more regular words because students, when faced with a word that is regular or orthographically and phonetically consistent, have a much higher likelihood of being able to read it. And then with irregular words, such as yacht, extremely challenging word to decode and figure out how to chew through that word, and sometimes some memorization does need to occur with respect to the patterns with which some of these irregular words are use. Most importantly, they start with some of those regular items, they work towards irregular items, and it's a much closer match to what students will need to do in real life. That is, when faced with a word, they need to be able to quickly and efficiently chew through the word and recode and unitize the entire sounds in the word to be able to read a whole word. Then we come to our gold standard measure. We all love oral reading fluency. Effectively, what we are doing is providing a student with connected text and saying, please read this. Typically, they'll have somewhere around a minute to get as far as they can through that text. Not intended to be speed reading, but it does provide you a qualitative picture of reading prosody as well as comprehension. Again, qualitative picture. Quantitatively, what you get a sense of is their ability to read connected text in a given time frame. Now, if you want a more quantitative measure of comprehension, you'd want to use something like Maze. This is a task where, again, in a timed frame, students have to identify a word based on 3 different options as they're working through connected text, because this offers some inferential and comprehension skills that we tap into. So it does give us a quantitative idea of how students are understanding what they're actually reading. Multiple choice formats most commonly used, but not always. Sometimes it's fill in the blank. So altogether, what we have is a beautiful continuum of different screening instruments we can use, all the way from letter naming or sound fluency through maze. Now notice that there are recommended grades at which these different measures might want to be implemented in your school system. So thinking through the measures that are currently implemented where you are right now, or would be pre-COVID times, think through whether or not the recommended grades are a good match for what's actually happening for your students. Are they getting these measures at the times that are recommended? Note that different screening batteries are constructed slightly differently. The overall picture, the overall message, is you want to be assessing absolutely critical literacy skills at the developmentally appropriate time. It would be inappropriate, perhaps, to give a maze measure to a kindergartner in fall. It may also be inappropriate to give a letter naming fluency to an eighth grader in spring, because we have floor and ceiling effects, and we know that these measures are not truly an indicator of student success next year or the year after. If we follow the continuum and the time frame when we should be assessing, then it is indicative, it is predictive of student growth and literacy skill over time. So another thing I want to draw your attention to, and this gets back to what Lauren presented at the very top of today's webinar, is that with these screening measures, we're really tapping decoding skills heavily. And I sort of mentioned this specifically with nonsense word fluency and phoneme segmentation. These are really getting to some really core decoding skills that are linked to print concept, phonological awareness, that's PSF, phoneme segmentation fluency, and then phonics and word recognition, like word identification fluency, word knowledge, that really links with maze fairly closely, and then fluency. Actually, all the measures I presented just now are all fluency measures. Fluency measures are simply quickly and accurately making decisions that children produce responses that typically have about a 1 minute time window to get as many items as they can. Fluency measures are really powerful because they're efficient. You can get that measure done in a minute, as opposed to giving a long, long task and then you wonder, is this really screening or is this more of a diagnostic measure? So overall, everything I presented so far are really tapping decoding skills. That's only half of the equation. There is also language comprehension. Language comprehension, extremely important for learning how to read and learning and developing rich, important literacy skills along the way. So note that screeners are not a cornucopia of all the things you might need to know. Screeners are one aspect, an important aspect of half of the equation. So as a critical consumer and a literacy leader, there are some things that you might want to be really playing with, and hopefully you've formulated some questions already around the things that you need to know and you really need to be playing with in a continuous improvement model. That is the specific skills that literacy screeners assess, how that screening data is used to improve instructional factors. Also, how can we use all of this background knowledge? How can we use our knowledge of within the SVR, the scientific view of reading, and simple view of reading rather, and how can we really promote a sense-making process that takes some of that strong science and then leverages all of what we know into instructional change? That all needs to happen within your data team. It really needs to be a continual process of improvement where you are impacting not just one teacher, not just one grade level context. It's a whole school model, because if our screeners are predicting student growth over time, then that means we can't simply be screening exclusively at one time point or one grade point and saying, oh, we know that if we do all the right things in kindergarten, it will work out for the rest of elementary school. That's not necessarily the case. Those touch points along the way are so, so important. So we overall want to be looking for administrative factors that drive implementation of literacy screening in our school. As a literacy leader, it's likely on your plate to be selecting screening instruments. Now, that one very common question is, how do I even start? Should we simply use the same screening instruments that we have used for the past 10 years, for the past 20 years? And the answer is, it depends. It depends on your local context, what you're using, and what the evidence says about that. One really nice way to look at this is using the National Center on Intensive Interventions, or NCII's, Academic Screening Tools Chart. They break down three very important areas: classification accuracy, technical standards, and usability features, and they speak to the evidence on each of those for screeners that you might already be using. In fact, I would put money on the fact that over half the people in this webinar are probably using a screener right now that is listed on this Academic Screening Tools Chart. I encourage you to go there. I think Lauren's already put the link in the chat. And really look for either your screener or a screener you're thinking about using, and looking at the evidence. Is there convincing evidence, partially convincing evidence, or unconvincing evidence that it links to good, strong classification that has really strong reliability, validity, some of those technical standards, and usability features? Can teachers actually use these screeners? So the NCI Academic Screening Tools Chart, so, so important, and I highly recommend you take a look. Now, again, as literacy leaders, we really want to be doing this with intention, with purpose, in order to implement strong practices in screening that inform a healthy literacy system, that are truly foundational in a healthy literacy system. This means that ideally, you're actually conducting a whole screening regimen along with state and perhaps federal assessments, and that walks you to the line of capacity. We really don't even have that much more time or ability to even think about implementing more screening or more data review time or more meetings. Now, I really, really want to draw you back to that earlier statement that each minute a child is assessed is a minute away from instruction. That is, when we are assessing children, we're not teaching them. When we're not teaching them, that's a minute perhaps lost to a really important instructional skill growth, which really reduces the gap where students' skills might be existing. And therefore, we want to be so efficient. As a literacy leader, if there's anything I can super encourage you to do, it's really think about tightening up your practices in the way that you're administering screeners to really be proximal to student and teacher need. So when we add additional assessments, they really need to be providing an added value. They cannot be something that you just do, collect the data, and leave it. They need to provide value to your overall literacy system. Now, that sometimes speaks to some of these more leadership-driven factors that you might want to be thinking about. For example, do you have an assessment schedule? Is that explicated anywhere that people can hold you, one, to account, to make sure as an entire school, we are all on the same page about what these assessments look like, when they are rolled out, and when the data is reviewed for instructional change? That can be short and long term. In addition, the really savvy literacy leader will link their assessment schedule to professional learning. They will say, okay, we're going to screen at fall, winter, and spring. And after our winter screening time point, once we've reviewed the data, we are going to select professional learning opportunities that are specific to the outcome data. We're going to be really intentional ensuring our teachers have built capacity to implement some of those instructional change features. I'm really speaking to the fact that as a literacy leader, we're looking for patterns of need for systemic improvement. So let's go back to that sense-making process and that graphic that I hope some of you have really will stick with you and think about how we can reach some of these goals. If our goal is to screen and identify students at risk for future reading difficulty, then there's a number of things we need to be doing. We need to be collecting data, using a sense-making process, and taking action on that. First, we want to be collecting data three times a year. I've already mentioned this a few times. I won't belabor the point, but please know that two time points is good for growth, necessary for growth. Three time points really helps you with instructional change. Then, sense making. Think through who uses the data. For the most part, at the screening level, that'll be you as a literacy leader, and that'll be some of your team leads and within your school data review team or your school assessment team. Now, some questions you might have: are students meeting their benchmark standards? And how can we address the needs, if there are needs, assuming that there are, in making sure that we can get students to benchmark standards. Now, taking action on that can look like many different things. Most importantly, at the beginning of the year, we want to be thinking about student tier placement. Are they really benefiting enough from core instruction? Or are they going to need intensified instruction? If we have a ton of students who need intensified instruction, and we're aware we don't have the capacity to put students in, to put every student in a class in an instructional group in addition to the language arts time that is already allocated, then how can we strengthen that core instruction? At the middle of the school year, we want to be checking in. Are students progressing on track as we would hope based on the instructional changes that we made? And then at the end of the year, not only were they on track, but did they meet some of those goals that we set specific to benchmarks? So hopefully there are even further questions that you have. We're wondering a number of different things and a number of different checkpoints to make sure that we are doing this in the absolute best way possible, informed by both practitioner and scientific research. I won't go through each of these, but I would really like to highlight the bottom one. Universal screening data should be organized for use and distributed to all staff members in a timely manner. I want to pose sort of a rhetorical question. How many times has an assessment of any type, not just screeners, but has an assessment been implemented in your context, in your school or your district, where you don't get the results from that assessment back the next month or the next couple months? Sometimes you don't get that assessment data back that same school year. So if you don't get the assessment data back the same school year, what can you do for instructional change? Not a heck of a lot. I really encourage you to think through some of these checklist items and think carefully about what it means to both collect data and then build in all the processes you need to actually use it. And I would encourage you to leverage an assessment schedule to do that. So again, I think this is probably a good check-in for questions and comments. I encourage you to use the annotate feature using, should be toward the top of your screen. There should be an option there. And then look at what you think your needs are around your school team and the resources you would need to actually support implementation.
Thanks. Well, everyone's annotating. David, I'm getting a lot of questions. There's definitely an active chat, and some are coming to me and some are coming to the group. And so I was kind of categorizing them as you were talking and wondering if I can ask a couple while everyone's annotating.
That would be great. And Lauren, I realized that we are getting closer to time here, and I really want to address the virtual context. So could I take just one question, and then please, everyone who has comments and questions, the session is being recorded, and I have my email address available. I would so love to hear from you and chat with you about some of these questions. So we'll just take one, and then I'll make sure that we move on.
Yeah, and I think there's been some questions about kind of the trajectory. So if children in one grade level, let's say second grade, are showing mastery in, for instance, nonsense word fluency, should they then be screened in MAYS? And this kind of links to some of the discussion about, you know, not implementing intervention too early. So I guess there were some of the questions related to kind of the trajectory of the screening.
Absolutely love that question. And that is something that I have personally sat on assessment and data review teams to try to sort out. When we have some of those component literacy skills understood and we see students really missing the mark on some, but making the mark on others, and what do we do and how do we adjust instruction appropriately? So this, I mean, that could be an entire series of webinars right there. But truly, ideally, your universal screening battery is consistent for all students. So decisions about follow-up screening instruments are really more diagnostic in nature. A screener is a GPS to where you're going. It gives you an idea of the road that you're going to want to follow. But then if something breaks down and you think, oh gosh, we really need to adjust something for these specific students, then you are going to want to follow up with either diagnostic or progress monitoring measures similar to screening. MAYS would not be inappropriate to give as a follow-up to students who have mastered nonsense word fluency. However, I will really caution you against assessing too much. We really want to be as efficient as possible. So try to keep that screening battery really tight. Make sure it is as indicative as possible of growth over time. And then for the students who need follow-up, that should be a smaller proportion of all the students that you're screening. We don't want to be following up with everybody. That is likely too much assessment. So hopefully that's sort of a good initial thought. If you want further thoughts on that, please email me. My email will be available at the end of the session. So again, I so appreciate your quick annotates. I'm sorry, I do have to clear them really quick because I know it is so important that we address the current context. So I'm going to go through that now. And part of this links to some of that earlier, some of those really important earlier pieces that Jess Searles was discussing in our first Lead for Literacy NAESP session. Know that you can assess virtually. It is possible. I am not saying you need to do this. I'm not here today to say that we need to screen just as we were in 2019, just as we were in 2018. I'm saying it's possible and there are some strong recommendations out there. We're going to watch a quick video on the next slide, but please know that we want to be using brief standardized assessment tools and we need to be following guidelines from the authors or vendors who make those screening instruments. I'm not here to recommend anyone in particular. However, I really encourage you to look for those virtual screening guidelines. And if they are not there, you may not want to use that measure. As well, we want to be comparing apples to apples. If we screen virtually in the fall, we need to be screening virtually in the spring and in the winter, because otherwise we're really comparing apples to oranges when we do a virtual assessment versus an in-person assessment. Those are not the same thing. Those are indeed very, very different. Really quickly, I'm just going to let you watch the first part of a video. It is an absolutely brilliant teacher, Sarah from Oregon. I don't know Sarah personally, but I think the world of her. You'll see why in this first little bit here.
Everybody, all right, are you ready to open your envelope, my friends?
Yeah.
Okay, go ahead and open your envelope and get super cozy and ready to do your very best reading for me. You just tell me when you're opened up and then I will give you your directions. Awesome job. Okay, so this looks just like it does when we read at school, doesn't it, bud? Yep, and I highlighted a mark, a word on that page, just like we do at school, and that's our end of the year goal, and sometimes we make it there and sometimes we don't, okay? So your job is going to be to do your very best reading for me for just 1 minute. I'll help you if you get stuck on anything, and if you don't have any questions, my timer is ready to go whenever you're ready to start reading. So when you're ready, you can just begin.
So that's all we have time for today for this video. I encourage you to see the whole thing on NCII. It is a wonderful demonstration of what can be done. Again, not what needs to be done, but what can be done in today's context. We really want to be flexible with those cut points for risk. It is absolutely acceptable and okay to make post hoc decisions once you have your data together about which students are at risk and which students are not. This runs counter to previous when those are sort of set at benchmark. A priori, now we can look at that post hoc after we've collected the data. As well, I encourage you to think about making decisions at the classroom level. That is for individual teachers to adjust their instruction in their classroom instead of at a grade-wide or school-wide level. Now, there are some things, literacy leader, you're going to want to think about: communicating with families really clearly, leveraging expertise from your whole assessment team. Again, focus on those alterable variables and plan for flexibility because that is what we are going to need. Now, there are a number of barriers to assessment implementation. I am well aware of these, and these are very likely magnified in the current context. Folks are going to have different comfort levels around test selection, interpretation, decision-making. Your school culture might be incongruent with really strong, really empirically grounded assessment practices. And as well, the pandemic has thrown everything off. We might have little to no consistency in the way that we're implementing things right now. I want you to know, as a literacy leader, there is so much you can do. First, don't let perfect be the enemy of good. Really work towards continuous improvement. As well, as a literacy leader, you are savvy, and I so want you with me to be a relentless champion for all student success at all levels. A few things to consider. Think about empowering all the educators in your building, getting involved yourself on assessment teams in some of these decisions and in some of these discussions, as well as collaborating across school teams, across grade levels, everywhere you can to build in that link between data and instruction. There are a number of resources I'm going to point you to. And for the heavy lifting on that, I'm actually going to leave that to Lauren now for a final activity before we sign off. Oh, Lauren, I think you're muted.
Thank you. Great. I just wanted to show everybody the Lead for Literacy website. So you can see exactly where some of the resources that we were discussing are. And there's also a resource list that accompanies this session. And if while I'm showing it, if you wanted to take some time to look for resources as well, we thought that we could search a little bit on the site. And then if you wanted to in the chat, let us know what you might be interested to dive into, you know, later on. That is great. So this is the Lead for Literacy Center, as I said, and the framework pages are on this link here, and you can see all of the Lead for Literacy framework elements. And so the assessment component, so what is your indicators of success related to assessment, you can find there. If you want to go to the resource repository, I know we just have a minute left, and just look, you can find more information about assessments there, and specifically the screening tools. So if you type screening in, and as I'm talking and wrapping up, if you want to look for some screening resources, the tools chart that we put in the chat is up there as well. And just let us know in the chat what either topic or resource or strategy might be a key takeaway or something interesting that you want to continue to explore with your school team or staff. We'll kind of have that conversation in the chat. And just to wrap up, thank you so much to David and to everybody at NAESP and Lena, and to all of you for engaging in the web event. There was a lot of activity in the chat, and as David said, we'll make sure to curate all of the questions we did not get to, and we'll make sure to address those as well. And so just to wrap up, I wanted to let everybody know that there's another event in this session. Coming up on January 4th, we'll be turning to more an instruction piece related to early literacy and the trajectory between pre-K, early childhood, and grade 3. But we will be coming back to assessment on February 16th and then moving to the instruction piece for the spring, wrapping up with professional learning on June 3rd. And I just really wanted to acknowledge again our partnership with NAESP and all of our partners and all of the staff on the Lead for Literacy Center, as well as our funders and our senior advisors. And thank you so much to everybody. I will turn it back over to Gracie and Honor. And this is our contact information too, if there's any questions or anything.
Thank you. I'm just so grateful for Lana and David and Lauren sharing your expertise today. I've spent a lot of time on the Lead for Literacy website. I always know that if I need current research on literacy, I can find something there. So I appreciate all the time and effort you put into your website to make that such a good, great resource for us. And I also appreciate, David, you saying that if some people have specific questions, that you're happy for them to email those to you. I think there were a few coming in maybe at the end, and we come to the end of our time. So thank you for that offer, and thank you again for being with us today and the great partnership that we have with you.